Why, hello there. Welcome back to a new episode of the Liberators Network podcast. My name is Christian Verwijs, and I'm very happy to be able to share a new episode with you. Because it's been a long time since our latest episode, and the reason for this is that Barry and I have been completely focused on the development of the Scrum Team Survey. This is a tool that we're creating that helps teams diagnose how things are going, and then we give them a lot of evidence-based feedback on what they can improve and where to improve. And the focus on the Scrum Team Survey also means that I've been doing a lot of development work the past 1.5 years. And it sort of rekindled my interest in what actually is necessary to create high-quality code that is maintainable, that also allows you to quickly adapt if you need to change something in your code base. And basically, it has everything to do with technical debt and code smells. So I also started exploring the scientific research about technical debt and code smells. And in today's episode, I want to cover some of that research. I want to cover some of the lessons we can learn from this research, some of which are quite counterintuitive. And I want to give you some practical takeaways that you can talk about with your team. This podcast and all the other episodes are sponsored and supported by our patrons. Our patrons are the people that donate a small amount of money every month, and it makes it possible for us to create this kind of content. And if you like our content, maybe you would consider becoming a patron too. You can check it out at patreon.com/liberators, but the link is also in the show notes. Having said all that, enjoy the episode. What scientific research has to say about technical debt and code smells? Why do you think code quality is so often an issue for teams? Why do many teams, despite their best intentions, often end up fighting a code base that is hard to test, resistant to change, and prone to strange bugs? I will admit that I have many intuitions about this, but I've also learned the hard way that my intuitions are often wrong. So I was pleasantly surprised when our friend Carsten Grunberg-Lutzen pointed at a peer-reviewed academic paper by Michel Tufano and his colleagues from 2015 called When and Why Your Code Starts to Smell Bad. So down the rabbit hole I went, and into a field of research that was unfamiliar to me, but also a field that has much to say about code quality and how we can be better developers. So in this episode, I will summarize the insights from the study by Tufano and draw in more recent research. This episode is ideal for developers with some experience, but it's also useful for people who support their developers in the development of their technical skills. It also ties well into a recent episode where we discussed a scientific study that showed how critical socio-technical skills of developers are to the success of agile transformations. But I will begin by exploring what technical debt and code smells are. Technical debt and code smells. Before I dive into the scientific research, let us first get clear on some definitions. Technical debt consists of everything that makes your code brittle to future changes that happen as your understanding of the code and the domain grows over time. Examples could be a hastily applied hack to solve a recurring bug, or the addition of one or more methods to an already bloated and long class of code. It could also be a copy-paste of an existing class, but just with a different name. Whatever the cause, technical debt inevitably causes more work in the future by not implementing a better solution now. This is also why Ward Cunningham coined the term debt. The higher it gets, the more interest you pay. This interest takes the form of more bugs, more time spent fixing weird issues, and more time required to comprehend code and what is going on in it. And in that analogy, refactoring is the process by which that debt is repaid. Now, it's important to emphasize that all code bases, no matter their quality, have technical debt to some extent, and that's okay. It's more important that you manage this technical debt in a way where it stays manageable, and it allows you to actually change your code base quickly enough. So sometimes you may decide as a team to accept some technical debt because it allows you to achieve something that's really important right now, and you also agree to to pay off that debt as soon as possible. The key word really here is to keep it manageable, to make sure that technical debt is on your radar, that you know how much there is, and that you have a conscious strategy of paying it back as soon as possible. You know that your code base has technical debt when it gets smelly. And all code bases, as I said, are smelly to some extent, regardless of their quality. The notion of code smells was popularized by Martin Fowler. There are many potential smells. For example, you're dealing with a blob class when a class is very long. But the code smell duplication happens when the same piece of code appears in multiple areas, and any change needs to be replicated there too. The code smell spaghetti code happens when you have very long and messy methods without parameters. Scientific research on code smells. That technical debt impacts quality does not seem to be a matter of taste or opinion. Many scientific studies have shown that code smells increase the time it takes for developers to change code and the chance that bugs are introduced in that code. For example, studies by Combe et al. From 2012 and Lee et Chatnaoui from 2007 show this. This effect is particularly apparent for code smells that lead to longer classes and classes with multiple smells, as shown in studies by Abbas et al. From 2011 and Politowski from 2020. Politowski and his colleagues also did a study in 2021, and they established through experiments that code smells that lead to longer classes also substantially increase the time it takes for developers to actually comprehend the code and find a good solution. An also interesting study by Soberg et al. From 2013 actually suggests that code smells themselves are not necessarily the issue, but it's rather the length of the class being edited and the number of changes that are made to it over time. Either way, code smells are persistent and they remain in the code for a long time after their initial introduction, which is what Chatzik Georgiou and Manakos also found in 2010. A single code smell may not necessarily be a cause for concern, especially when that smell doesn't make the class longer. More troubling is that surveys suggest that a third of the developers have no or very limited knowledge of code smells at all. This is a study by Yamashita and Monin from 2013. This isn't helped by the vague definitions of many smells and the fact that smell detection is highly subjective and dependent on the experience and preferences of individual developers. Now, you would think that refactoring is often aimed at the removal of such code smells, but that may not be the case. A study by Bavota et al. From 2015 studied over 10,000 refactor-focused commits on three open-source systems, and they found that those commits actually rarely removed code smells. So even though the intention of the developers was to refactor the code, they didn't actually remove code smells. Why and when are code smells introduced? So it seems clear from the science that technical debt leads to more bugs and hampers the productivity of developers. But when and why are they introduced? My personal intuition as a developer tells me that code smells are often introduced by inexperienced developers. I suspect that time pressure and pressure from management may have a big influence on this. But it also seems likely that code smells are introduced during ongoing maintenance of code rather than at the very start. But as I said before, I've learned that my intuitions are often biased. The work by Michel Tufano and his colleagues from 2015 is particularly revealing because it tries to answer the question of when and why code smells are introduced, and the conclusions are not as obvious as you would expect. So what did they do? Tufano and his colleagues analyzed over 500,000 commits from 200 open source projects belonging to Android, Apache, and Eclipse. They focused their attention on five code smells that represent specific violations of principles of object-oriented programming. I'll now list the five that they focused on so you have a sense of what they did. The first one is the blob class. And a blob class is a class of code that is large and serves many different responsibilities, which are actively used throughout the code base. This smell is sometimes also called a god class, but basically it's very long and has many responsibilities, which makes it confusing to understand. The second smell that they studied was that class data should be private. So a class should not expose implementation details on how it stores information internally. And a violation of this code smell could be that there are certain variables that are internal but are shared and accessible to other classes and can be changed through other classes. The third code smell that they studied is the complex class, which is actually quite similar to a blob class. But a complex class is slightly different in that it contains many nested branching statements, like different if-then statements for each statement, and then different levels of it. So that's a slightly different code smell from blob classes. The fourth code smell that they studied is functional decomposition. And that's the idea that a class implements only a few methods from an inheritant class, while also declaring many private fields and methods. That basically means that your functional decomposition is probably not as ideal as it could be, and this is considered a code smell. And finally, they looked for spaghetti code, which is a class without a clear structure, long methods without parameters. Now, how did they actually try to identify these code smells in the code bases that they studied? The researchers measured 7 code metrics for each class that they found that was added or modified by commits, including lines of code, the number of methods and attributes, the weighted methods per class, and the response for a class, and the number of couplings with other classes. They also analyzed the context surrounding each commit, so this included the type of commit, if it was a bug fix, a new feature, a refactor, or an enhancement, but it also included the owner of the commit, and whether or not that person was a newcomer to the code or someone who'd already worked on it before. The researchers also cleverly used issue tracking data to estimate developer workload and where the commit was on the timeline from the conception of the project to the current day. Now, they found a lot of interesting things, and I will summarize the key findings from the study next. But you can always look at the original paper by Tufano and his colleagues to find all the details about the methodology and their results. The link for this is in the show notes. The first finding by Tufano and his colleagues is that most code smells are introduced from the start. This is actually different than what I would expect intuitively. I would expect that code smells are introduced gradually as the code is changed and maintained by one or more developers over time. But that's not what the study shows. The study shows that most code smells are introduced from the start of a new class and then stick around for a long time. Furthermore, the first signs of blob class and complex class smells are often introduced at the start and tend to become stronger as developers add more code over time and basically don't refactor the class into smaller classes. This finding does not match my conventional wisdom, and that's great. It shows us how important it is to spend a bit more time on the initial design of a class. Classes that are badly designed tend to become more smelly over time, and it's important to be there and counteract this as soon as possible. The second finding is that smelly classes can be identified early on, which is good news. The researchers found that problematic classes, where you have many code smells or code smells that are very strong, can actually be identified early on. Classes that become smelly tend to see quick jumps in various code metrics that were studied compared to clean classes. So when a class quickly grows in the lines of code over several commits, or the number of methods it has, it is likely to be or become smelly over time. What I think is most important about this finding is that even trends in simple metrics, like lines of code and the number of methods, go a long way in identifying problematic classes early on. This is great news for teams, because you can automate these kinds of metrics, and you can basically get feedback on it whenever you commit new code. It's a great way to identify these kinds of smells early on, and try to prevent them in your code. The third finding is that experienced developers are more likely to introduce code smells than new developers. This is also an interesting one, because my intuition, as I said, is that they are introduced more often by newcomers or by developers that are maintaining a class they didn't create, but Tufano and his colleagues actually show that that's wrong. They show the opposite. They show that code smells are significantly more likely to be introduced by the owner of a class, the person who created it and is most familiar with it, instead of newcomers or other developers. In fact, newcomers rarely seem to introduce code smells. The smell that newcomers tend to introduce the most, however, is spaghetti code. Which I guess makes sense, because spaghetti code is a sign that people can work on how they write code, how they write clean code, and for new developers this might be tougher. Now, although this finding disproves my intuition, it does make sense. Newcomers are probably more hesitant to make big changes, whereas experienced developers are more inclined to do so, maybe even eager to do so. Experienced developers are also more likely to take on complex coding challenges. So what I think is most important is that no developer is immune to code smells, regardless of their experience and familiarity with a class. I think this should be a humbling conclusion for any developer. It certainly is for me. The fourth finding is that most code smells are introduced just before a release. Now, the study by Tufano and his colleagues also provides empirical support for a common experience among developers. And if you're listening and you're a developer, you will recognize this for sure. Namely, that bugs and code smells are introduced in the period the weeks before a release. Tufano and his colleagues calculated that the majority of code smells, which ranges between 89% to 98%, were introduced in the month before a major release. When we take into account the loss of developer productivity and the increased chance of errors, this underscores how costly a final rush to release actually is. It really creates crappy code, and you'll have to pay a lot of debt to actually recover from this in future sprints. And that brings us to the final finding that I think is interesting from the study by Tufano and his colleagues. This is that most code smells are introduced by busy developers. Over 55% of the developers that introduced new code smells in the study also had a high workload. The researchers measured this by calculating the total number of tasks that were assigned to a developer at the moment of a smell introducing commit. This is only a rough approximation of the actual workload. It doesn't take into account other work that developers have on their plate and was not included in the analyses. It's also possible that busy developers simply contribute more code and thus more code smells. However, the pattern was the same across all open source projects that were studied. So this finding provides at least some empirical evidence for a common intuition, which is that if you're really busy as a developer, you're probably also going to be a bit more messy and make more mistakes because of it. Now, these are five interesting findings, but it's always important to recognize the limitations of a study. A clear strength of the study by Tufano and his colleagues is that it uses a huge sample of hundreds of thousands of commits. That's a very nice thing because it allows you to identify patterns and give you more robust conclusions. It also cancels out a lot of the noise that's caused by differences between projects, commits, and individual developers. However, it is important to note that the analysis was performed on data from publicly available repositories and the associated issue trackers. Although the large size of the sample evens out a lot of administrative mistakes in how work is tracked, all the measures are still approximations. And finally, it's also important to recognize that the study only investigated 5 code smells. The selection was based on prior research and was intended as representative of violations that often happen in object-oriented programming. But maybe the patterns are very different for other kinds of code smells, so other studies can explore this. So now that we've taken a look at this study and the findings and the limitations of it, let's take a look at some practical recommendations that you can apply based on this study and the other studies I mentioned with your team. The first recommendation is to learn about code smells with your team. As I said, many of the teams that were studied did not actually know what code smells were or which code smells existed and how to identify them. So a great starting point is to learn about them. And there's a good page on Wikipedia that shows you the different code smells that occur quite commonly. I'll put a link for this in the show notes. But I highly recommend that you go through this list as a team. A good way to do this could be a weekly tech talk, where you pick one of the code smells for each session and then agree on a shared definition and explore whether or not it exists in your codebase and how much priority it is for you to prevent it from happening. It's important to keep in mind that not every code smell is a cause for alarm. Some developers feel that even if-then-else statements are a smell. And there is some point to that, but as the studies in this post show, not all code smells necessarily hamper productivity or comprehensibility of code. Some are more a matter of taste, and their prevention can lead to overdesigned code that is hard to understand for less experienced developers. The most worrying smells are those that indicate that your classes are getting too long, which is what happens with spaghetti code, blob class, but also the complex class smells. Also, the presence of multiple smells in a single class is a sign of trouble, so start with refactoring those. The second recommendation is to use lines of code to identify long classes early and augment that with other metrics. As I mentioned, many code smells are detectable with code metrics that can be run during builds, locally or on your build server. A useful metric to explore is called cyclomatic complexity, but you can also look at lines of code or class coupling and depth of inheritance. Most professional IDEs like Visual Studio offer these out of the box, or you can use a dedicated tool like SonarQube to create reports for you. There's really no reason to not use metrics like these. They're often freely available, they're not hard to understand, and it's always very easy to run them on code bases, especially for modern day software programming languages. The third recommendation is to identify code smells during code reviews and then use pair programming to resolve it. Code reviews and pair programming greatly benefit from this increased awareness of code smells. It gives you a language to what most developers intuitively know isn't good. The research we discussed in this post suggests that it is most beneficial to look for smells that are related to class length, like the blob class and spaghetti code. By reviewing each other's code, you can find these issues and then you can identify better designs together. This is also a great way for developers to learn how to recognize the smells and to avoid them in future work. It's also a great team building activity. So this is a good way to practice code reviews and pair programming. The fourth recommendation is that a flexible initial design makes your code less brittle to future changes. The research that I report in this episode basically shows that code smells are often introduced in the earliest versions of a class and then remain there throughout the lifecycle or even get worse. So if you want to keep your classes short and tidy, you have to consider strategies to do so before and during the coding of the initial version. A danger is that this can lead to something called analysis paralysis, where you keep thinking about the ideal design rather than writing it. So I found the following steps to be helpful in many cases, but I will also say that this is just my own experience, and many developers have different ways of doing this, but there are a couple of steps that always work well for me. The first step is that I write the skeleton of the class by adding empty methods and attributes that I expect to fulfill the responsibility of the class. So I name the methods, I name the attributes, I name the class, so that it captures what they do in the terminology of the people that are using the software. So I will call a method markOrderAsPaid or refundOrder. This is all a good example of domain-driven design too, so you're actually practicing that in this case too. The second step is that I evaluate the skeleton and look for where I can break it down into smaller classes with fewer methods. So if your class handles orders and you find that it manages them in a database, you can also create one class to handle the orders and one class to manage them in the database. This is a good example of the single responsibility principle, or SRP, in software development. And it naturally results in small and concise classes that are generally easy to understand. The third step is to use something called dependency injection to inject your classes, or responsibilities, into other classes. So for example, you can inject the class that manages orders in the database into the class that handles the orders. This is a good example of a principle called composition over inheritance. The fourth step is to start with one class, and then apply test-driven development to it by writing the tests before and during the writing of the code. Whatever you choose, whether you write it before or during coding, make sure you implement the code for the class so that all tests pass. That way you know that you have a good test suite. The fifth and almost final step is that it's useful to evaluate the class that you just created. Does it have many lines of code? Does it have many methods? How many unit tests do you need for this class? How many parameters do you have for the methods? And how many injected dependencies do you have? For each of these, it's basically the more you have, the more you're dealing with potential code smells. Because this is what they are. They all indicate that your class is getting too large. So if you have tons of dependencies that you need to inject, if you have many unit tests that you need to test a single class, or if you have many parameters for your methods, try to find better, cleaner, and simpler ways to write the same class, or break it up into separate classes, because that's probably what you need to do in this case. Now, the final step is to repeat this process, to repeat these steps, until you're satisfied or don't have time left. Now, don't worry if the code isn't optimal. Every experienced developer will tell you that the perfect design does not exist. You can and will refactor this code later, as you learn more about the domain and the code. But the steps you've taken here allow you to actually make it easier to change your code in the future when you need to change it, because it basically makes it easier to read the code, to see what's happening, and to break it up further or add changes that are important in the future. So these six steps are helpful to me to make sure that I write and create a flexible initial design that makes it less brittle to future changes. But like I said, there are other ways to do this. This is the way that works well for me. And that brings us to the closing words. Code smells are signs of low quality code, and every code base is smelly to some extent, but some stink far more than others. In this episode, we explored scientific insights on code smells. And one clear pattern from the studies we discussed is that long classes are particularly problematic. They make it harder for developers to comprehend what's going on and to make changes. But very long classes are also more prone to errors and require more effort to change. Code smells like blob class, complex class, and spaghetti code clearly tie into this. The effect of other code smells on productivity, comprehension, and error proneness is less clear. These may be more a matter of personal taste or preference. Many code smells are generally introduced in the earliest versions of a class, rather than somewhere during maintenance. Now, surprisingly, code smells are also more often introduced by experienced developers and those who create the first version of a class, rather than junior developers or other developers that are maintaining the code. Unfortunately, code smells seem to stick around for a long time, so it's a really good idea to invest in the early detection of critical code smells through code reviews, pair programming, and simple code metrics. The studies I shared in this episode suggest that this investment is worthwhile because it boosts productivity and decreases the potential for bugs and other errors. And if you ask me, it also makes your work as a developer a lot more fun, and it makes the work as a team of developers a lot more fun. So what's keeping you, right? And that brings us to the end of today's episode. I really hope you learned something new about how to create better code. And if you're not a developer yourself, but you work with many developers, I hope you will bring it to your team and talk about it with them. Now, if you have feedback on today's episodes or thoughts you'd like to share, you can always contact us at info@theliberators.com. You can also support the show by going to patreon.com/liberators to see if you can fund us for maybe $1 a month or maybe a bit more. And we give you a lot of nice benefits in return for your support. We're always happy with whatever you can share. If you don't have the money, that's fine, no problem at all. We'll continue making this podcast. But maybe what you can do is share it with others or write a nice review on Spotify, on iTunes, or whatever you're listening on, so that other people can also find our podcast. Having said all that, I want to thank you so much for listening, and I wish you a great day and a lot of fun writing better code. See you for our next episode. Take care.